You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Levy.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to MeetingOfLife.tv. I'm glad you can join us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let me introduce us. I'm Philip Menchaca of Meaning of Life and BloggingHeads.tv. And you are Levy McLaughlin, a professor in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at North Carolina State University. And we're here today to talk about religion and politics in Japan.
That's right.
And you seem like a good person to talk to about this. It's your field of expertise, and particularly Soka Gakkai, which is Japan's largest, I guess you can call it new religion, new religious movement.
Yes.
And it's actually, it's international, and you've spent years doing, I think, field work. It's called participant observation research, where you not join, but, you know, observe the group on the ground.
That's right.
And I should say, Soka Gakkai is not just in Japan, but it's an international organization.
That's correct. Soka Gakkai is arguably Japan's most successful religious export. And that's saying a lot if you think about, you know, Zen and things like that.
Right.
In terms of sheer numbers of adherents, they claim members in 192 countries and territories across the world, possibly two million members outside Japan. And the claims in Japan are 8.27 million households, the official number, which is exaggerated, but something like 3% of Japan are active participants in Soka Gakkai.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, at least in the West, I don't think it's not talked about much, which is funny because it is this enormous religious movement.
Right.
And so I wonder if you could just give us a quick description of what they believe.
Sure.
Or of the group generally. Yeah.
The group is a bit of a paradox. Technically, the largest so-called new religion in Japan — new religion is a very contentious term, but it basically means any religious organization founded in the last 200 years or so. They didn't even begin as a religion, as the name of the group may indicate. Soka Gakkai can be translated literally as Value Creation Study Association. And that indicates its roots as an educational reform movement. It was founded by a bunch of school teachers in and around the 1930s, people who were interested in particularly reforming elementary school education. The two primary founders of the group converted to a form of lay Buddhism following the teachings of a medieval reformer named Nichiren. And this made them basically adherents of a very particularistic type of religious practice, which focused on the primacy of a specific teaching in Buddhism called the Lotus Sutra, the putative final teachings of the historical Buddha. And all other teachings were considered to be false and to be done away with. And so complete was their dedication to this exclusive focus on the lotus that these founders, whose names were Makiguchi Tsunesaburo and Torajose, were willing to be imprisoned by the wartime Japanese authorities in defense of their religious principles. So they were some of the very few people in Japan who actually resisted wartime authoritarian government. And Makiguchi dies in prison. Toda is released from prison right before the end of World War II and goes on to basically construct the most massive religious organization in post-war history.
Yeah, and we'll get more into sort of the political side of things in contemporary Japan right now, but I think, you know, even, well, you tell me, even at the beginning when it was being formed, how much was it sort of religious movement, and how much was it more of a political reaction to this time of great upheaval in Japan?
One of the things to keep in mind for why Soka Gakkai grew so large, it's that these two trends are intertwined. So Soka Gakkai distinguished itself by entering into electoral politics pretty early. It started running independent candidates for office from 1955, and in 1964 founded a political party called Kolmeto, or the Clean Government Party. And Kolmeto has been accused by its religious and political detractors as being in violation of Japan's post-war constitution. The constitution guarantees a division of religion and government. The defenders of Kolmeto point out that the constitution also protects freedom of association, freedom of expression, and other things that would allow any group to enter into political life. But Soka Gakkai entered into politics because of Nichiren Buddhist mandates. Back up a little bit on here. So Nichiren was a medieval founder who lived in the 13th century in the 1200s in Japan. And he distinguished himself as being absolutist, as I mentioned earlier, focusing entirely on the Lotus Sutra. Followers of Nichiren have also sought to basically realize his posthumous desires, his aims, by celebrating the conversion of the Japanese populace by constructing a specific type of temple facility, which is called, in modern language, the Kokuritsu Kaidan, or the National Ordination Platform. And so in order to construct this, first you have to convert the majority of the populace to Soka Gakkai, or to Nichiren's Buddhism. Soka Gakkai thinks this means converting to Soka Gakkai. And then to get the national government to support the construction of this massive facility. So Soka Gakkai started fielding candidates expressly because they wanted to construct this. But that's not where the story ends. So what happens when you enter politics and when you become successful in terms of a lasting presence in electoral politics is that you become part of the machine. You become part of the existing structures. And so Kolmeto may have begun as a religious project, but today, if you look at its policies and you look at its politicians, it is what I and my colleagues argue is a normal party, in the sense of formulating policies that appeal to voters, finding a place for itself as a minority party within, strategically finding a place for itself as it is now in the ruling coalition. So it is now the junior partner in Japan's National Diet ruling government. So it cooperates with the LDP, or the Liberal Democratic Party, and has been cooperating with the LDP since 1999. And so far, there's no evidence that there's been an attempt on the part of Kolmeto to carry out this religious project. In fact, it expressly abandoned it in 1970. And so far, that seems to be pretty much the case.
Okay.
And this has led to conflicts between members of Soka Gakkai, who now see Kolmeto as growing distant from its founding principles.
Yeah. So what we have is, religious organization and with a goal to, an explicit goal to spread Nichiren Buddhism throughout Japan.
That's right.
And a expression of that is the construction of this this shrine that they're trying to...
That was a motivating goal. Mm-hmm. Now, there were a series of scandals and upsets in the 1960s that led Soka Gakkai and Kolmeto to officially split. And by 1970, they were separate organizations. And since then, we haven't seen them attempt to create any kind of equivalent of that national ordination platform. So there are a few other things to keep in mind, however. One is that members of Soka Gakkai continue to treat electioneering on behalf of Kolmeto candidates, and now also on behalf of their LDP cohorts, as part of their religious practice. So Soka Gakkai members have a few core things that they carry out. They will carry out a chanting tradition every morning and every evening, where they will chant sections of the Lotus Sutra, followed by the seven sacred syllables of the title of the Lotus, which is Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. And the repeated invocation of Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is focused on the other cardinal part of their practice, which is an enshrined calligraphic mandala. It's an object of worship they receive and they will put into an altar in their homes, or in some cases carry on their person, and will serve as the focus of this chanting practice. A few other things are sort of key religious practices, things like conversion. which uses the Nichiren Buddhist term shakubuku, which can be translated as to break and convert. It was considered to be a particularly harsh means that was suitable to lands that had slandered the Lotus Sutra, which included Japan, according to Nichiren. And so interpretations of what shakubuku would entail have changed dramatically over time. So when Sokugaka was growing by leaps and bounds from the 1950s up till the early 1970s, shakubuku was pretty much a hard sell tactic to convert people by any means necessary. And since then has softened to a large degree. And these days, members are most likely to approach non-members in what is called taila, or dialogue, as a means of sort of convincing people of the benefits of joining Sokugaka. The other things that people will do is solicit subscriptions to Sokugakkai's daily newspaper, which is called the Seikyo Shinbun, or basically the Holy Teachings News is how you might be able to translate that. Seikyo Shinbun, the newspaper, has a massive circulation, 5.5 million, which makes it the third largest paper in Japan. And a few other things, but really key among those is electioneering. And that continues to be a major source of critique of Sokugakkai by non-gakkai members.
Yeah, I want to get back to that, but maybe we should quickly define, too, what is unique about Nichiren's interpretation of Buddhism.
Sure. Well, Nichiren was, when he was young, he was not unique. He was one of many founders of his age who was brought up in the Tendai tradition, which was a dominant temple-based Buddhist order. Through his training, he came to realize, though, that within Tendai, the lotus was seen as basically the apex of an ordered series of teachings from the historical Buddha. But according to Nichiren, he was driven by some concerns of his era, and one of the main concerns he had was, if all of these other teachings are meant to be effective, why then has Japan run into all of these calamities? Why are there natural disasters? Why do the Mongols threaten to invade our country? Why are there pestilences and wars that are ravaging the place? All kinds of things like that. And he concluded that essentially those other teachings were pernicious and false, and that people had been lied to, and that they had to instead wholly embrace the lotus in order to achieve salvation for the land. And so he basically put himself into this position of constantly transgressing against the authorities of his day. So he created himself as a biographical model that subsequent generations of Nichiren Buddhist followers have sought to follow. He was exiled twice, and once the government of his age sought to decapitate him through an execution, and that attempt failed through a miraculous intercession, which is still much debated these days. He lived to a comparatively old age, died in 1282 at 60 years old, but his followers have basically embodied this kind of Nichiren-style martyrdom drive and this attempt to sort of demonstrate themselves as committed to a mission that is bigger than themselves. During his lifetime, Nichiren was a pretty marginal figure. He didn't have a lot of followers. But in the centuries that followed, there seems to be like a resonance between what he taught and the types of structures that came up, that became authoritative. And this became particularly notable in the modern era. And so of the so-called new religions in Japan, the largest ones remain Nichiren Buddhism-based. So Sokugakkai, Rishokosekai, Reiyukai. And there's another group called Kenshokai, which is opposed to Sokugakkai quite virulently, but also relies upon many of the same teachings.
Yeah, one of the interesting features of Sokugakkai, I think, is how conflict does seem to be a motivating factor, or opposition, I should say, yes, to the trends of the day, I guess you could say. Like, as you pointed out, Nichiren was persecuted, and then when Sokugakkai was established by the school teachers in, the 1930s, it was again opposed by the state.
That's right.
And then since then, into up through modern times, Sokugakkai has been the object of a lot of criticism and even people calling it a cult. And it's so it is, do you see that with the members that you've spoken with? Is that a motivating factor, a sense of being fighting a larger power of some kind?
The way I would think about it is this. One of the questions that always comes to mind is, why would someone join a group like this?
Yeah.
What is the motivation to join a group that is largely maligned, that is seen as being marginal, that is, as you pointed out, is labeled with the label with as cult, right? Why would anyone join this? And so you have to think instead of what to whom has Soka Gakkai appealed and why? And so the way I think about it is to make sense of Soka Gakkai is to look at the institutions it has managed to construct. And I've just completed a book, which I'm happy to say is going to be coming out from University of Hawaii Press, in which I talk about Soka Gakkai in terms of the ways it is mimetic of the nation state itself. And so after the Second World War, Japan was devastated. But then within about two decades, it embarked on what has been labeled the economic miracle. And so it grew from basically being completely ravaged by the experience of the Pacific War to becoming the second largest economy in the world. And as you're probably too young to remember this, but there was a point at which Japan was seen as kind of this rising force that would rival the United States and all kinds of other things like that. And there was a famous book by Ezra Vogel called Japan is Number One, which is a bestseller and things like that. So Japan was labeled as this giant success. But of course, within stories like that, there are all kinds of people who don't enjoy that success, who fall through the cracks, who aren't able to take part in that that escalator ride up to economic security and social legitimacy. Women, the poor, there's people who are sick. If your education was robbed from you by the experiences of the war, all kinds of other reasons like that. If you'd moved to the city and no longer had a social infrastructure that you could rely upon, Soka Gakkai was set about establishing means by which people who were otherwise disenfranchised to achieve social belonging in a format that received universal approbation. That is to say, the format approved by the nation state itself. So what does it construct for itself? Well, for one thing, it is a gakkai. That is, it's a study association. And at the root of all success, especially that which is approved by the modern nation, is standardized education. And so it basically gave people an alternate means by which to realize educational aspirations, to not only for themselves, but to be able to teach other people and to master very difficult things, things like details of Nichiren Buddhist doctrine that's written in medieval Japanese, and a host of other topics like that. It created a very sophisticated bureaucratic structure for itself, which is led by presidents and vice presidents and covers everything from cradle to grave, from the earliest education up to massive grave sites across the country. It has a newspaper, so it has all of the formats of the spread of information and the control of information. It organizes its own secular school system that goes from kindergarten up to Soka University in Western Tokyo, and since 2001, Soka University of America in Orange County, outside of Los Angeles. So in all of these, and of course, Komeito, so it has a governmental presence as well. So in all of these ways, members are able to participate in the formats that give their life meaning, upward mobility. And of course, on top of all of that, you're part of a mission that is greater than all of that because it's a transcendent Buddhist mission of salvation.
Yeah,
this incredible combination of elements. It was a perfect storm headed by charismatic authority. So at present, Soka Gakkai is headed by honorary president Ikeda Daisaku, who became third president of Soka Gakkai in 1960. And since then has been the absolutely unquestioned authority on all matters within the organization. And so the group, as it expanded tremendously in these through these various institutional innovations, also solidified its focal point as Ikeda himself.
Yeah, and I think perhaps that is one of the reasons why it's been criticized as cult-like because it does have this strong emphasis on charismatic leaders, I guess.
It certainly does. And that is a source of a great deal of contention. And the members I speak with, though, will often sort of narrate their own lives in terms of their affective connection with Ikeda. So in some cases, they have met him, although in most of those cases, the meetings have been fleeting. But in any event, they cultivate themselves, and this is quite explicit in the language they'll use, is as disciples. Ikeda is Ikeda disciples. And so much of what they do in the understanding that, at least on an affective level, that is to say, not necessarily on a cognitive, logical level, but on a way that an emotive response, that what they do is appreciated by and desired by Ikeda Daisaku himself. And so, for example, the urge to really push the boundaries of what you're capable of in terms of working full time, taking part in electoral campaigns for Kōmeitō, converting others to Soka Gakkai, training existing members in doctrine, all these things at once. It's just extraordinarily demanding schedules that dedicated members maintain. Much of this is motivated by the that this is what Ikeda Daisaku Sensei wants. So, of course, this leads to all kinds of issues that people are contending with right now, because on January 2nd, 2018, he will turn 90 years old. He hasn't appeared in public for many years, although there are the administrators of the group are always strongly urging that he's in very good health and is simply retired from that kind of activity. But the question does remain, what will happen after his lifetime to an organization that has been dedicated to him for many decades at this point?
Right, and there's no clear successor, is that correct?
Explicitly, no. This is a group that has forsworn charismatic leadership, and so it's in the process of undergoing what Max Weber has called routinization. So the transformation of a charismatic authority that, you know, in a single person imbued with this power into a bureaucracy. And so there's been an attempt to basically get members used to the idea of following along with leadership that has been diffused into these different administrative roles. Lots of questions remain about what's going to happen, though, as a result of that.
Yeah, whether or not that will be successful, we'll see. So how do they become part of Soka Gakkai? What's the process? Does someone just, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of different entry points, as there are with...
Sure. Mostly the members that I've known who have converted, I should say also at this point that most members are at second or third or even fourth generation, something like 65% plus, easily.
So your parents would be members of Soka Gakkai here?
And that's become increasingly common. And I think actually, ultimately, Soka Gakkai will become a family-based religion, as is the case with many so-called new religions that began as very dynamic, conversion-oriented groups that have become much more sort of family-oriented. But people do convert, and what you're supposed to do is chant, actually, for 3 months minimum before you are given an object of worship in a formal ceremony, and thereafter enter the roles of the group. And it's quite demanding, actually. To learn the chant is not easy at all. It usually takes people at least 6 months or so to quite become adept at that very difficult incantation of a Chinese version, or sorry, a medieval Japanese version of Chinese syllables that read out the teachings of the historical Buddha from India. It sounds quite esoteric, but is performed by millions of people every day.
Yeah, and are there Soka Gakkai centers that host conversion events or events intended to bring in new members, or do people more engage in, as you said?
Most likely you will be introduced to the organization and through and to regular practice by home-based meetings. People don't meet in temples. Soka Gakkai began as a lay organization under a temple-based group called Nichiren Shoshu, which was a minority lineage following Nichiren. But in 1991, Nichiren Shoshu and Soka Gakkai split after a series of very acrimonious fights between the leaders, between Ikeda Daisaku on the Soka Gakkai on the one hand, and the Nichiren Shoshu priesthood on the other. And so on November 28th, 1991, Nichiren Shoshu in one day excommunicated more than 95% of its parishioners. I don't know if there's a precedent for that. That's just an extraordinary moment for any religion, is to get rid of that many people who follow you.
What's the state of it today? Does it have...
Much reduced, as you may imagine.
Yeah.
That's been one of the big issues that people have been contending with. It's like, how do you deal, I mean, on purely on a financial level, for example, with the loss of that kind of parishioner support? It's been a massive blow. And Sokogakkai reeled to a certain extent as well, because it had no longer access to its primary object of worship, which is at the head temple of Nichiren Shoshu. So it had to come up with ways around that. It had to come up with ways of producing its own replicas of that object of worship. And another big thing, and this is a big thing for any religion, is dealing with death, dealing with graves and memorials. And so historically, members would be buried at Nichiren Shoshu temples. And so there are a lot of lawsuits, many of which are still ongoing, about moving those graves to Gakkai memorial sites. And also, there were no longer priests who could perform memorial rites for them. And so all kinds of really intriguing institutional, liturgical, and doctrinal innovations had to happen in order to accommodate these various needs.
Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe it'd be a good time to turn to the current state of Soka Gakkai's political activities. As you noted, electioneering is almost seen, well, I guess, is it seen as sort of like a religious obligation if you're a member of Soka Gakkai?
It's certainly treated as such. And so ordinary, I should return to a point that I lost earlier. So members, if you're going to join Soka Gakkai and if you're going to get to know about it, chances are you get to know about it through home-based meetings. And the home-based meetings are called zarankai, which is actually a term for a study roundtable that's ordinarily used by academics. So it would be kind of like this. If we had a few more people, we'd be holding a zarankai. So it's intriguing that a religion uses this term as their primary meeting. And so they no longer meet in temples. They will meet in what are called culture centers. And Soka Gakkai maintains several thousand culture centers across Japan and also in many other countries. Around major elections, you will also start to see people meeting in these zarankai and other facilities as well to talk about strategies for electioneering. They will, at times, candidates from Kolmeito will come and give an address. And they will encourage members to appear where candidates are speaking on the street. So Japanese elections, for one thing, Japan has enormous numbers of elections, quite different from the American system. And they'll run from anything from a local city council up to what's called the National Diet. Japan maintains a bicameral legislature with the lower and upper houses, all of which are elected. And so you'll see candidates go out, usually it's 2 weeks before election day. There's a very set period in which candidates are allowed to electioneer. And they'll go out on the street and give very boring speeches from sound trucks. And ordinarily, if you see this outside of a train station, for example, if you're in Tokyo, you'll see this during election time, and most people just walk by, and there are very few people, if anyone, listening. If it's a Kolmeito candidate, you will often see hundreds of people gathered around. And those will be members of Soka Gakkai. It's extraordinary. It's such a contrast. And so they will do this themselves. They'll get other people who aren't members, for example, to come along. And they'll carry out a practice of going to visit their friends, former schoolmates, and any acquaintance they may have had in their lives. They will contact via phone, fax, email, and go door-to-door. Door-to-door campaigning is actually illegal in Japan. It's against the law. But the way around that is, if you're going to visit your friend and you happen to speak about the upcoming election, you know, this is not covered by that law. So Gakkai members have become quite adept at drawing up lists of their friends whom they'll go visit, and then having their other co-members go with them to help them out on this. It's an arduous campaign, arduous practice. It takes a lot of energy and money, too, on the part of members to carry out. And so is it technically part of their religious practice? No, but it has become woven into the regular Gakkai life expectancy. And so, and there's a bit of a gender split this way as well. You'll see particularly that where the married women's division of Soka Gakkai, which is women who are married or women over the age of 40, In other words, it tends to be people who have time during the day. Japan remains a very gender segregated society on the whole. And Sokogakkai is conservative by Japanese standards. So women will tend to be homemakers or work in ways that they allows them to do things like meet on a weekday afternoon, to attend a lecture by a local candidate, or go door to door. So they actually are working very hard indeed, but usually not drawing a salary.
Yeah, well, it seems like this would be a very attractive thing to politicians to have an organization like this behind you.
There's no other group matches Sokogakkai's ground game, no other group. And so this is a major reason why the Liberal Democratic Party went into coalition with Kometo. Because basically they wanted to take advantage of Kometo's vote-gathering machine.
And the LDP, the Liberal Democratic Party, that's the dominant party in Japan.
That's right.
And it's contrary to how U.S. ears might hear it, I think it tends to be the more conservative party, right?
It certainly is. They have been in power, except for a few years here and there in the 90s, and then from 2009 to 2012, they have been the governing party since 1955 in Japan. And so for this reason, Japan is often accused of not being a real democracy or being somewhat compromised democracy. That's actually not true. The voters are free to vote whomever they want. There's a pretty robust series of mechanisms in place that would allow for the overturning of this power, and there's precedent for it now. The truth is, though, that they're just very, very good at staying in power through a number of means. And it turns out one of those is taking advantage of Sokogakkai's tremendous mobilization potential.
But I think there's been maybe some recent cracks in the ties between...
Yes, there have been. So there's a really intriguing aspect to this. So the Liberal Democratic Party has been pushing, as you mentioned, they're very conservative. And of late, they've been pushing toward a campaign of constitutional reform. The most famous aspect of Japan's post-war constitution is what's so-called Article 9. Article 9 forswears the use of belligerents to resolve international disputes, the maintenance of war materials, and it's sometimes called labeled the Peace Clause of Japan's constitution. It's very popular and has made Japan quite distinct. Some critics argue that Japan, because Japan did not have to pay for its national defense, it was able to mobilize instead economically, and that's one reason why it became such an economic powerhouse in the post-war. It is also still used as basically America's largest aircraft carrier with bases all over the country. And so there have been all kinds of ways in which Article 9 has been compromised already in terms of its reinterpretation. Japan doesn't technically have an armed forces, but it has what's called the self-defense forces.
I think, sent some troops to Iraq. Is that right?
Right. And so there have been a sort of a series of compromises that have allowed SDF forces first to engage in peacekeeping operations in the 90s in Cambodia and a few other places in Southeast Asia. And then there was a big sort of debacle when Japan was seen as not pulling its weight during the Iraq War in the 90s. And then thereafter, has sent troops to take part. And so the fear on the part of critics is that should the constitution be changed, Japan would become a normal country in the sense of taking part in warfare, and this would see combat troops taking part in war in places like Afghanistan or others. And so there's a lot of animosity toward that because the memory of the war remains in Japan. Mm-hmm. The memory of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, of wartime devastation, though that generation is now dying out, it's a keenly important part of Japan's immediate past for many people, and they have no interest in repeating it. Kometo was founded on a platform of world peace. It's actually in the founding charter of the party in 1964. And so it is what was striking is that in 2015, there were a series of new laws that were put forward, that were rammed through the Diet by the LDP and by Kometo, 11 new laws that were called the security legislation, basically allowing a reinterpretation of the Constitution to allow for what's called collective self-defense. So in other words, if and they always mean China, if a power is to attack a Japanese ally, in other words, the United States, at present, Japan would not be allowed to intervene because of their constitution. Collective self-defense would allow Japan, the Japanese military, to do something, for example, to stop a Chinese ship from ramming an American ship, to shoot down a missile shot from North Korea on its way over to California, things like that. So these are seen as, actually by a majority of people, as being reasonable. But there are also some hardliners who thought that any compromise would be a slippery slope toward basically returning Japan to taking part in war. And so there were a bunch of big demonstrations outside of the National Diet in September of 2015, or before that, in the summer of 2015. And what was striking to many people who were observing these demonstrations were there were members of Soka Gakkai waving the Soka Gakkai flag. Soka Gakkai maintains a very distinctive tricolor flag, which looks like a national flag. And they were basically rebuking Komeito Diet members for violating the founding principles of their party, but also of their religion, of being, because they are fellow Gakkai members. This was striking to many people. And so there has been, that's one. So the latest stuff, okay, so right now, there's a strong attempt on the part of the national government to revise the constitution. By the way, the Japanese constitution is the longest unrevised constitution ever in history. So that's quite a striking thing. Basically, to add a clause or Article 9 to acknowledge that the self-defense forces are not on the constitution. So that's one thing. So Komeito's probably, we'll see how they go. They may or may not. There has been a rift, though. So what's starting to happen also, and I don't know how much this is relevant to those who study religion, but it's certainly relevant to those who study politics, that the national government, Komeito, is cooperating with the LDP. At the Tokyo prefectural level, that is to say, basically the equivalent of what we would call the state level in the United States, in Tokyo. Tokyo is massive, right? It's 1 in 4 people in Japan lives in Tokyo. If Tokyo were a country, it would have the 6th largest economy in the world. It's
wow.
It's absolutely giant, right? They have a new governor, a woman named Koike Eiko, who is very powerful, very popular, and very right-wing, and very nationalist. But she has secured the cooperation of the prefectural-level Komeito in her fight against the LDP. So you got this? So Komeito is cooperating with the LDP at the national level, and they're fighting against the LDP at the Tokyo level. And so you have to think, for one thing, well, that's the first big fissure in that alliance. The other is that what kind of voter are you going to have, right? What sort of person has the sophistication to distinguish between supporting this party, their partner party at the national level, and then fighting against them in different campaigns in the Tokyo level? You have to have a very sophisticated voter, someone who's able to make very fine distinctions, who can justify this seeming paradox, and they do. So Soka Gakkai members are extraordinarily well informed about policy and about different aspects of government. They are well informed partly because they're constantly being educated by either politicians or by fellow members during electoral campaigns. For example, I saw a bit of this when I was in Japan last summer in July, right around the time of the upper house election. Diet members were going from district to district and carrying out study sessions, which were attended largely by women, by Married Women's Division members, who were given extraordinarily detailed pieces of paper outlining why each of the 11 laws that had gone through the diet the previous year was not in violation of the Constitution, and how it could be defended when people were at, they're anticipating questions they were going to get when they started to talk to people to solicit votes. I've not seen anything quite like that anywhere else. And so basically the average Gakkai member is better informed about politics and religion than even sitting politicians in some cases, or religious professionals in some cases. It's quite an extraordinary thing to see in action.
So is your sense that most of, or what has been the reaction at the individual level to Kumeito's support of these changes to the Constitution, and what has been the reaction at sort of the Soka Gakkai organizational level?
Soka Gakkai organizational level has been remarkably distant from it. And in fact, they sort of have issued statements along the lines of, we resent the sort of attempt to politicize our activities, which is seen as a bit disingenuous, actually, by some people. The members are complex. And I have to state very strongly, these are friends. If you spend, and as the way I have, spend years and years with people, you have to love them. Right? And so these are, I'm not a member of Soka Gakkai, but these are definitely my friends. And as is the case very often with friends, you don't always agree on everything, you know. And so, but I've been able to ask people about their reaction. So I actually wrote an article about this, which is available online if you want to look up.
We'll link to that.
That's great, yeah. Because it includes some of the responses I received from some of these members regarding what they thought of Kometo's move to support this new law, these new basically pro-military laws. And they justify them in most ways. And in no cases did I find anyone who said, I don't support Kometo anymore. In fact, it was quite the opposite. People were finding ways to continue to support the party, even as they may have had issues with specific politicians or, you know, sort of prevaricating on various things. They nonetheless continued in their support. And I was anticipating finding all kinds of groundswell movements against it, and I simply haven't found it. And the members who put themselves out there during the protests and, you know, advertised themselves as members who were opposed to the new laws have undergone pretty severe ostracization. They've been subjected to all kinds of accusations from their fellow members as either being not really members of Soka Gakkai or deluded or possibly even plants from, for example, the Japan Communist Party or some other opposing force. Which I don't think is true. I think they are members who have different opinions, but they've really been stigmatized as a result of speaking out. And so there are a lot of costs to sticking out in this way, apparently.
Yeah. And well, just final couple of questions here. One just topical, with tensions rising around North Korea, is your sense that there's more people in favor of these kinds of changes, or, you know, how is that affecting people's views of debate?
Profoundly. I mean, in most of my conversations I've had with people, yeah, the very real geopolitical threats have been front and center. Members have said, you know, we are worried about what's going to happen to Japan. We need to be able to live our lives. And so the threats that are the burgeoning threat of North Korea, for sure, but also, you know, more on the sort of longer phrase, where is Japan going to go? What kind of country is this going to be? Kometo is very difficult to pigeonhole as a party. It tends to respond to the priorities of its constituents. And as I mentioned, the constituents are largely are women. And so you don't see a lot of focus most of the time, actually, on those kinds of big ticket defense issues. You're much more likely to hear things about, for example, an allowance for new mothers to help raise their children, which was a Kometo policy that became government policy, actually, under the LDP. All kinds of other things about the environment, protecting clean water and air. For, you know, these are the kinds of things that, in other words, local constituencies are going to worry about. They're willing to go along with the security stuff, although they also portray themselves as the, what's called in Japanese, the hadome, the break against the most sort of reactionary desires of the ruling party, the LDP. So the right wing of the LDP, which is pretty darn reactionary, wants to really basically wipe out the Constitution, bring about an imagined vision of Japan in the 1930s of a resurgent imperial order. And the Kometo people and the Soka Gakkai supporters present themselves as fighting against the worst offenses in that regard. So they see themselves as having a role in government, and they're willing to compromise a lot on policy in order to stay in that position, in order to have some, to wield some influence, because they spent decades in opposition and they resented being out of the game in that regard.
Yeah, and so now that they have a certain level of influence in politics, they're willing to be more flexible with some of these issues that otherwise would be real breaking points for them.
That's right. And so in that respect, they are a real party. They're a normal party in the sense that this is how politics works, right?
Join the game.
You have to compromise in order to stay relevant. And yeah. They've been doing that.
Well, this has been very interesting. Thank you very much for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. All right. Take care.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.